We thought that it would be good to give some context for today and having talked a few weeks ago before Easter about some of our local context, I thought we'd go large on context, and so I'm going to attempt to do the whole of church history in 10 minutes. And there we go. So in the beginning, God created, and he created it, and he looked at it, and he said, that was good. And of course, part of what he created was human beings, and with the image of God and with a specific purpose within creation to be kind of God's ambassadors and take care of it. But they thought they'd rather trust snakes than God. And so before long, as God goes into the garden and calls to them, they start to hide. And that's a pattern that kind of keeps going all through history. So a little bit later, God calls another person. He calls Abraham, a wanderer, and he calls him to enter a special relationship with him, to renew this relationship, and promises through his descendants to bless the whole earth, you know, which was his mandate right from the beginning. And Abraham starts to follow him. But before you know it, his descendants are in Egypt, and they've become slaves, subject to oppression. And so after a while, God calls again, and he calls from a bush, a man called Moses, and calls Moses to lead the people out of slavery. And on that first Passover, that's what he does. And not only that, but God actually goes with his people, first in that pillar of fire and the cloud, and then through the tabernacle, and later in his presence in the temple. You know, so things kind of, well, as you know, even from the very beginning, things are pretty up and down, and they carry on being up and down with those people called to follow God. So that they tire of just sort of following God, and they said, we'd rather have a king. And they have Saul, and that doesn't work so well. And then they have David. And in hindsight, that feels like a real golden age for them. But more than that, God promises that there'll be a descendant of David whose kingdom will be established forever. And so there's this sense from here on in, you know, the sort of Jewish mind reflecting, you know, we're waiting for this king like David. But in spite of that, things often tend to go from bad to worse. And before you know it, they're being exiled. You know, they start to worship other gods. They're taken to other countries. A little bit later, the Greeks kind of take over, and that's okay for a bit. And then they start to oppress them, and then they rebel, and then the Romans eventually take over. So across that process, you get these sort of Jewish communities being pushed all over the Middle East and the Mediterranean, and they're sort of waiting and waiting in the 400 years when God doesn't seem to do anything. But then, first announced by John the Baptist, we find Jesus stepping into the scene, and both stepping into this mantle, this expectation of the Messiah, the king like David, but also God in his God with his people. So both at once, both God with his people and Messiah. And he starts to call disciples to follow him. Although it quickly becomes apparent that the sort of king that he is not the sort of king they were expecting. And so following him, he says, involves taking up crosses. And before they know it, it turns out that that's not just a metaphor, but it's literally true. Because somehow, in going to the cross, Jesus is kind of taking all of the consequences of rebellion and idolatry and sin and dealing with them and breaking the power of the authorities that have been ruling pretty much since the beginning and making a new start for God's chosen people, which is everyone, you're calling everyone. And so that's demonstrated in Jesus' resurrection, and in his ascension, he starts to rule with God and releases the Holy Spirit on the early church. And so they start to tell people, you know, that Jesus, he actually is the Messiah. You know, he really is. And not only that, he's God with us. And, you know, that's good news. And so partly driven by persecution and partly by that inspiration, the early church spreads quickly, first to the Jewish communities that have been spread out all over the place, and then to the Gentile communities around them. And through those first three centuries, the church grows quickly, especially around that sort of Mediterranean into Europe and up to Britain as well. And so, you know, things really, really grow. You know, it becomes really inspiring. But maybe because of that success or other reasons, things start to shift. And in particular, the Roman Emperor Constantine says that he sees this vision of conquering in the sign of Christ, and he becomes a Christian and he makes it legal. And by the end of the 4th century, it's the official religion of Rome. And we enter this era when Christianity is really, really tied up with empire and with kings and period and majority religion called Christendom. And it all gets a bit complicated when Islam comes on the scene. But still God calls people, and I guess some of the most important ones there being the monastic orders like the Benedictines and the Franciscans, who are kind of really keeping alive, you know, a real devotion to God through that period. But things all kind of come to a head, and there seems to be a lot of corruption, and the Bible is now being mass-produced. The printing press has been invented in order to distribute it, and off the back of that, there's a whole bunch of grassroots, you know, kind of back-to-basics Christian initiatives, which we call the Reformation, and also Counter-Reformation, where within the Catholic Church, and a lot of that is dealt with. Some of it's obviously tied up with politics, especially in Britain, but nonetheless, behind that, you know, kind of a returning to principles. And at the same time, the Americas are also being conquered as well. And that leads before too long into an era that we call the Enlightenment, which is really kind of about the success of science, which was actually built on a foundation that believed a lot in God, but it was a God who was distant, who wasn't really involved. And so that kind of culminated in some ways in the Industrial Revolution. You could see it's kind of a demonstration of the victory of man's initiative. But even so, you know, God continues to call people, you know, the Wesleys and so on, kind of revivals of different kinds. And then a little more recently, beginning of the 20th century, of course, the emergence of Pentecostalism in the Azusa Street Revival. And if you look at the last 100 years about this as a global map of Christianity, you can see, you know, there was very little Christianity in Africa or in Asia at the beginning of the last century, whereas now they're kind of really, some countries have a very large fraction of the world Christian population, whereas Europe's barely grown at all in terms of people calling themselves Christian. And if you look behind those figures, you know, just for Britain, say for the last 40 years, then you get this very steady trend that people calling themselves Christian declining, that's the purply line, people claiming no religion increasing to the point where they're now the majority in the UK. And if that's people, you know, just sort of writing it on the census, but then if you go and look at who's actually turning up to services, or what kinds of religion, so Church of England really suffering, you know, we're not doing too great, Methodists, some other Christian denomination going up a bit, but Muslims, that's one of the significant increases in people claiming religious affiliation. So beyond just, you know, people ticking what they identify with, if you look at how what people do, you see there's not so much change in people kind of regularly engaging with religious services, but remember that includes the Muslims too, and on average they get more devout than Christians. So it's really the kind of nominal ones who are dropping off the most. And that big increase in people who've had got no history of religion now in Britain. And really the sort of one of the main things that's driving that is this fact that it's kind of this generational decline. So they reckon from their research that if you had a family in which both parents were Christian, probably on average about half their children would choose to follow their faith. And that's been happening for, you know, 2, 3, 4 generations, which is that sort of basic drop-off in people identifying with Christianity and faith. So that's, you know, some of the bigger context, which leaves us, you know, here today in Ruddington, thinking about what God's calling us to here in our particular context and our rather middle class village on the fringes of Nottingham. But really, I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that it's the same call. You know, God calls people to be his people, to have that, you know, sort of ambassadorial role on earth, to care for the earth with and for him, to be in relation with him. But our situation's different. And so, you know, exactly how we respond to that obviously needs to be thoughtful in relation to that.